So are we recording? Okay, yeah. Yes, we are recording. Okay. What up, everybody? You're now tuned into
Okay.
the True Definition of a Sports Fanatic. I'm your host, Brendan Lampley. And today, hey, I got another special guest. Can you please introduce yourself to the people, man?
Thank you for having me on. Robert Littow, the founder of Black Sports Online. Great to be with you. I've been watching you rise up the ranks, and I'm very proud of you, my man.
Man, I appreciate it, man. I can't lie to you. It took me some time to get your name right, because I didn't know if it was Little, Littal, Littal. So, you know, I heard you on TMZ one day, and I said, okay, it's Littal, it's Littal. I got
yeah,
it.
you're
I got
not
it.
you're not the first to do that.
Yeah, man. So I mean, I've talked like we talked already, and I was telling you about how I kind of started seeing you in like 2016, and I know a little bit about you starting Black Sports Online, and I knew you said one of the things you mentioned is that how the media, they push certain narratives, and you know they kind of tell whole truths, they have truths or whatever, and they kind of push what they want to push. And they don't necessarily give you the truth of everything. So he's like, you want to start your own. Tell me a little bit about how Black Sports Online came to be.
Yeah, I mean, it was a different time, but the same thing still apply in the sense that when I started, there was a very low level amount of Black media people in the online space. In the digital media space, you know, it was different back then. It wasn't so much social media. People did the smartphones and the streaming and all of that stuff was not really a thing back when I started. But I think I saw the potential of that, the way the internet and things were going. And what I noticed was at that time, you know, the only voices that you heard were older, you know, white gentlemen, predominantly speaking about younger Black athletes. And a lot of their, you know, what we call takes now, opinions or whatever you want to call it, editorials, were off. I mean, it didn't make any sense because they just didn't really understand the people that they were covering. So I wanted to get into the business, you know, not to discredit, you know, what they were saying or what their opinions were, but to just give people a different perspective, a perspective of someone that has been in those streets, has been in those shoes, kind of understands them a little bit, players a little bit better. And as things changed, you know, as far as, you know, digital media, online media, you know, podcasts weren't a thing when I started. I mean, it was just sports talk radio back then. You know, all of these things have changed and we've seen, you know, more diversity out there. But the problem, unfortunately, is that more people who are against us or people that look like us now have a platform, be it through social media, podcasts, more television, more streaming services, more news services, more sports media. So while it's great that there is more diversity and there's more of us out there, there's still a problem in the sense that the narrative can get hijacked because, you know, especially these days with all of the social justice and things that are going on, the narrative can be hijacked and you need people like myself and others to tell the truth about what's really, you know, going on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And to piggyback off that point, I was talking to my mother and, you know, she's been very supportive, you know, of me going forward with this. She's the one who told me I was afraid about, you know, I didn't think people wanted to listen. I didn't think I was any good. I hadn't really been on camera at all, had done any podcasts, had done anything. And she was like, she said, you know your stuff. She said, just go ahead and do it. And so Sunday we were talking. I said, I feel like 2020 has been a rough year, but I said, I feel like it's a year that signifies change. Because one of the reasons why it's good. I see more people that look like me up in, you know, in higher places, but it's still not enough. There are a lot of older gentlemen who need to be ushered out and you need to bring the new ones in, because the kids today, they, especially the NFL players and NBA players, they're showing you that regardless of what you believe in or how you feel, this is our game. You're either going to, you know, watch it and go along with it, or you're just not going to support it anymore. You know, so
yeah.
I was watching, I think it was It was Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth that Thursday night game against the Chiefs against the Texans. And, man, it was like pulling teeth for them to talk about social justice. Did you listen to them talk about that? It was like pulling teeth. They didn't have a good time talking about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I talked about this today. When you talk about racism or police brutality or social injustice, it's really the only time that you see the country and especially a lot of white people, they're so uncomfortable. Like, nobody's uncomfortable if you're talking about, like, breast cancer, right? You know, if you're giving a spot, if you gave a spotlight, and even if you take stuff that has criminality to it, for instance, if there was NFL decided, like, hey, we're going to really step up our stuff about domestic violence, right? And you can wear, you know, whatever, you can wear somebody that's been a victim of domestic violence or sexual assault on your helmet, right? No one's uncomfortable talking about that. If anything, they would say that, man, this is a great thing. This is a beautiful thing. I'm glad the league and the players are not turning a blind eye to this. And they would get so much praise. But when you say something like racism and you say something like police brutality, which are evil things in our country, people, they just don't care. I honestly think there's a, well, we know it's a good portion of our country because we have Trump as a president that, you know, are very upfront about the fact that they don't particularly care for Black people. They don't particularly care for Black lives. They don't particularly care for us, in the country, even though, you know, we have every right to be here as much as they do. Like, I always, people say, oh, go back to Africa. I'm like, you go back to England. You know, not like you were here and we casually walked over. You know, we didn't ask to come. We it's not like, you know, we were like, hey, we want to go to America and be beaten and slaves and be discriminated against for 100+ years. No, none of that. So yeah, I think it's a situation where also people in the media are pushing those narratives. And that's the scary part, because what people don't understand is media controls opinions. If the media says something enough, people will believe it because most people are followers and aren't independent thinkers. So, if the media has been criminalizing Black people for as long as it's been around. And it's really no different than any country like a China or North Korea. We do it to Black people the same way that they do it to their people. And it has a lot of the country thinking that way. So anytime something bad happens to a Black person, the first thing they think is he must have deserved it. And that's a jacked up way of thinking.
Oh, it is a jacked up way of thinking. I was talking to a guy I work with, you know, he's a white guy. And I told him, I said, you do know that more white guys are killed by police than Black men. And I said, you guys should be just as outraged as we are. And I'm starting to understand when it comes to cases like that, when a white guy is killed and why they don't care, because they automatically think, well, he must have did something to deserve it in the first place, you know?
Yeah, the problem is that, you know, each individual circumstances are different, right? What happens is what they don't tell you is a white person may get killed by the cops, but he also may have shot at the cops 40 times before they shot him. You know, show me the shooting in the backs. You know what I'm saying? Show me the running away. Do that. Show me the 10 minutes of a chokehold. Like, you know, here's the thing. The videos are out there the same. But you don't see the videos of the white, quote unquote, white on white because they're not outrageous. And furthermore, you know, people use stats to once again muddle up the facts of the matter. There's tons more white people in this country than it is Black people. It's like 13%. It's only 13%. I think 13% Black people in this country. So when people say, "Oh, it's more white people in jail than Black people," but if Black people make up 40-45% of the incarcerated people, and there's only 13% of us in the country, that's a problem. If 500 police shootings happen, and 300 are white people and 200 are Black people, but we only make up 13% of the country, then the math is still, you know, off. and everything. And my thing is for any white person that says any of that stuff that makes the excuse, like I always say, think about this. If your son or daughter was shot in the back by a cop, right? And someone said to you, statistically speaking, would that matter to you? No matter what the statistic was, would it matter to you?
No.
If you got harassed, if you got shot, if you got put in a chokehold, if any of that, and someone, and you felt like you had been wrong, and someone, you know, went on TV or came up to you or told your family, and while you guys were marching at the police station, well, statistically speaking, you know, how would that make you feel? You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's just crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. Knowing good and well that they're going to burn the city down behind their baby.
Right. I mean, sure. just think about what they're like. You saw the two cops that got shot in Compton, right? Immediately, what happened?
Yeah.
Big reward, a thousand tweets, all the information's out there. You know, they put
them. Sure, called out LeBron.
Calling out LeBron. Trump saying he should get the death penalty. That all happened like within 24 hours of the shooting. What happened? The cops that shot Jacob Blake in the back. I mean, what has it been, 2 months almost? I don't remember. Yeah. I don't remember. I remember Trump saying, let's wait on all the facts. I remember all these other people say, well, you know, he had a warrant out. You know what I mean? Like, there's no one else. If you and I go shoot a cop, nobody's ever going to say, well, maybe he had a reason. You know, you know, maybe there was a reason for
that.
You know,
They're not going to bring up the. No, I was going to say, they're not going to bring up the cop's past. Like, if he's a dirty cop, if he's been reprimanded, whatever dings on his records, they're not going to bring that up.
Right. Yeah. So it's all of the stuff that they try to say. To me, it only proves our point. When someone says, why aren't you marching because this cop got shot? I'm like, why would I have to? Everything in they're moving God's green earth to find the killer. Why would we have to do anything? Here's the thing. If a cop shot like a black person in the back and the initial response was to arrest the cop and then figure it out later, there wouldn't be no protest. You see what I'm saying? If the initial reaction was not paid vacation, not let's hide his name, not fake it. If the initial reaction was, hey, there's a 10-minute video of a cop with his, you know, knee and somebody's neck screaming for their mother, saying that they can't breathe. If within an hour they brought that cop in to jail and said, look, we're gonna charge you, and then we're gonna sort out all of the other stuff.
Right.
What would there be to protest? Because justice would be getting served. That's the problem. That's the thing. So when someone says, oh, a cop got shot or a white person got shot, I'm like, we don't have to protest. I know they're going to find them and what they're going to do with them.
Yeah, definitely. Dude, that's like, I know one of the guys from time to time, I see you, you'll call him out. I know once his owner called his brother's inmates, Mr. J.J. Watt, you said, you kept asking him, say, what do you have to say about that? And he never made a statement about it. When the players linked their arms in unity Thursday night between Kansas City and the Texans, you know, the crowd booed. You know, it was 17,000, only 17,000 there. But those boos were clear as day that you could hear. And it wasn't during the national anthem. So it shows you that it's not about the flag. It's not about the military. It's not about none of that. They want you to shut up and play ball. And J.J. Watt, his statement was very ignorant to me because he was like, he didn't understand why it was happening.
Right. That's why people think like, oh, you're just trying to start trouble and all of that stuff. Nope. You're trying to go viral. Like, you know, if you go through like my timeline on a daily basis, I'm not sitting here adding athlete every day or anything like that. It's real specific because that's what I'm trying to get them to understand. I'm not attacking them. I'm like, listen, man. Right. You may be a great guy, right? You may give all the charity, and you're not racist, and you're but your idea of what America is looked at through rose-colored lenses. So when I call out a Drew Brees and I call out a J.J. Watt, I'm like, listen, Drew, you just think that you're taking a picture with Donald Trump. You just think it's not a big deal. He's just a politician, right? Like, you aren't seeing the devastation because it has no effect on you. And I think with J.J. Watt, I think someone like J.J. Watt, it takes a while because he's like, I'm J.J. Watt. I give to the hurricane people. Everybody loves me. I'm a good person. And they don't see it any deeper than the surface level. So something right. like that has to happen. Like, you know, Drew Brees has to be called out by his, you know, teammates. J.J. Watt has to sit there and literally be confused. Like, wait a minute. I actually thought that these people were upset because of the anthem or the military. Like, no, J.J., they're upset because we're black. That's it. There's nothing else to it. And, you know, I hope when the light bulb goes off that they then in turn, you know, do the right things. But sometimes they don't. I mean, look at Baker Mayfield. Like, he knows, right? He knows what's going on.
He knows.
Because, you know, Baker Mayfield got a little brother in him anyway. You know what I mean? So he knows what's going on. He knows. how I treat it. But somebody got in his ear and said, look, you know, State Farm, whatever those commercials he does, those insurance commercials, hey, you know, they may not like that. You know, oh, you got all these endorsements. You got all of this. Yeah, you know. So what he said originally was like, hey, I don't care if I lose fans. I don't care if I do this. I don't care about that. That was real. But then, you know, his wife gets in his ear. Hey, we got MAGA friends and da da da. Your cousin's a cop and somebody and then the white people say, you know something? In the end, I like black culture. I like to dance. I like to do everything I like everything about black people except, you know, being black. So I was going to go back and reel it in.
Shoot. One of his most famous videos is not him throwing the football. It's him doing a traditionally black hip-hop dance in front of his teammates, and they all going, yeah. And that's one of his most viral videos that I've ever seen. I'm pretty sure they got in his ear. We don't want that. You do the Donald. We don't want to alienate people. That's what they do. That's what they're doing. We don't want to alienate anybody.
It's very interesting to me because if you look at the country as a whole, right? You think about, like, say, the Kardashians and people. Everything that people do is to be more black. You know, they get tans. They get their ass. Excuse me. They get their booty done. You know. They want to dance. They want to do the chant. They want to be like Megan Thee Stallion, Beyonce. You know what I mean? Like everything they do, all the boys. They want to, you know, they want to rap. They want to wear their clothes a certain way. They want to be anti-social. Everything, you know. You see ESPN. They try to do the little cool. I saw ESPN do a future meme, like SportsCenter. You know, like okay, somebody's don't got it. You know. Everybody wants to do a title like BSO. They want to do a title like Bossip now. You know what I mean? Like, they all want to take the culture all up to the point where we say, you know something? We would just like equality and to be treated nice. Then all of a sudden, they go back into their white, you know, little cubbyhole, the bubble of that. And I find that very interesting that they love everything about us except us as a people. So it kind of, you know, that goes back for a very, very, very long time. Music, fashion, whatever you want to, you know, think of, you know, a lot of stuff that has been co-opted came from us. You know, that's why I always say the Kardashians is a good example of that. The Kardashians just took everything that someone like Superhead, you know, was doing, some like Flavor of Love or whatever was doing. They just took all of this stuff that was pre them and said, hey, we just whitewash it. And, you know, they made billions of dollars off of it.
Yeah, repackaged it. I know allegedly, because, you know, I won't get no trouble, allegedly they've been stealing designs from young black designers. Of course. And I've seen it. They'll rip it off. And they wouldn't even put their own twist on it, man. It'd just be a blatant copy of the young, especially young black women who got their clothing lines or different products or whatever. Mm-hmm. They just, I've seen it, just allegedly ripped it right off.
Of course. I mean, that you see, like I said, I sit back And I, you know, I'm not saying that I'm the end all be all of things in the online media world, right? But I find it ironic, you know, when, you know, a phrase that I made up, like IG model, makes its way to the, you know, the New York Post or the New York Daily News, you know, like,
yeah,
that's, you know, to things mm-hmm. like that, you know, it's like, okay, all right, I see, I, you know, oh, I see your title now got a little more characters to it than it used to, you know, like mm-hmm. it's stuff you see and you right. know that they're biting it, but that's, you know, that's yeah. what you have to deal with as a Black person in this country. And the problem is because we don't have like the generational wealth, it's hard to fight. Like you can't, how you fight the Kardashians? Yes. They got all them lawyers. You know what I mean? Like the stuff that like yeah. basic necessities that you need to fight an all powerful entity is very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they'll, I've seen a thing where they were talking about 45 and how it's hard to, I guess, sue him because of some issue they were talking about. And they were saying how he's going to keep it in litigation for a right. decade. Like his lawyers, they work around the clock and you will be out of money before you can get any result of the said case.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that goes back. I mean, yeah. That goes back to us not having that wealth.
Yeah. That's what people don't understand this. This is very funny to me. And I talk to people about this all the time. They say that, you know, when people like say, well, what about Black on Black crime? What about Chicago? What about all of this stuff? And I always say this to them. I was like, let's just imagine, honestly, let's just be honest. If Black people had their own, like, was never brought over here, and we had our own country and just did whatever we do, right? And was able to build our own wealth and stuff. Do you think that if the roles were reversed, and white people, you know, we were the you know, the over whatever, the ones that was in control and brought white people over as slaves and never gave them, you know, an opportunity. We didn't give them anything, you know, put them in poverty, kept them in poverty, make sure the loans are hard to get, put things in place to where the poor is just hard to get up out of that hole. You honestly think that'd be any better? Honestly, I think that'd be worse because to me, white people, some white people, not all, but some white people is like this. It's like, you guys have all the advantages and you're still mass murderers, shooters, killers, you're violent. You know what I mean? Like you have the advantage and you're like that. We are at a disadvantage. The fact that we're able to do as much as we can, we have done, to me is a minor miracle with all of the obstacles that they put in our way. I say, if you switched out, you know, like the movie Trading Places, if you switched out all the people, Black people in Chicago, and put them out here in like in the suburbs where I'm at and put all these people down in Chicago, they wouldn't be able to function, you know, in any type of way. So like, come on, like that, like to me, it's like, it's very difficult to sit there with a straight face and tell people to say, hey, don't be violent. Don't be this. But I'm like, if you can't, you don't have no money to eat. It's the summertime and you can't get your air conditioner. It's the wintertime. Your heat's not working. You're going to do what you have to do. Right. If you didn't have to do it, I don't think anybody grows up and says, you know something, at 5 years old, I want to be a drug dealer. I want to be a gang member. I want to be a violent criminal. It's a product of your environment. And, you know, if you take those people out of that environment, they would be productive people. I always say, look at LeBron's school that he did. Right. All he did was take some kids that weren't getting the proper education, didn't have good teachers, no books, didn't have a way to get to school. Parents were struggling. All they did was put them in a better environment and their scores go up like 10, 15, 20, 30%. These are smart people, kids. Mm-hmm. It's just a product of their environment. Now they have a chance. You know, that's the difference. Yeah. And that's why rich white people want to make sure that we never get what we owed because they know what would happen if we had the opportunity.
Just look at public school versus private school. Mm-hmm. I mean, the studies are out there. You can go look them up yourself, people. I ain't got time to do research for you. Go research it yourself and look and see the turnout, how kids turn out versus public school versus private school. The results are night and day. It's night and day. That's why I think charter schools are now, I've seen a lot of them, they're popping up all over the place, especially here in Jacksonville. Like I did an interview last night with James Coleman. James Coleman, he's a former Florida State Seminole I know he was with the Patriots for a little bit. He does sports for First Coast News, and he has a sports day with Denny Thompson. And he took time out of his day to come sit with me, and we interviewed. He talked about it. He said, growing up, he said, drug dealers or athletes. He said, once you start to see, you know, the men in your community, that's what was most flashy. That's what we all wanted to be, because we didn't know any other way. Black lawyers, black doctors, black business owners, car salesmen. You had ladies who were innovators and, you know, achieving great things. Those weren't pushed in the media. Those narratives weren't pushed. So you didn't get a chance to see those en masse. Now, because we have the platforms, you can see those people and see those, see, like, me being able to find a guy like you without social media and the internet, it never happens.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some negative sides of social media, and then there's some positive sides. A lot of times they're bumping heads. Like, I swear every day I say, you know, social media is a great thing. And then at the same, a different part of the day, I'm like, I honestly wish I would never have to get on here again. Like, it's that extreme, because the toxicity of social media is heavy. But the connections that you can make, I wouldn't be here without social media, because there literally wouldn't be a way for me to get my stories out to the masses, you know, without it, you know, without Facebook, without, you know, Twitter. I wouldn't be able to have the following and things of that. And I wouldn't have met, you know, all of the influential people that have helped me throughout the years. But on the flip side of that, I've seen social media be really, really negative. I've seen them turn on people. They've turned on me, you know, my own people from time to time. It's a gift and a curse. It also helps propaganda. I mean, Donald Trump's not the president if he runs for president in 2012 or 2008 or 2004. He's the president because of the disinformation he was able to himself get out there on social media, and, you know, all the Russian bots and the fake, you know, white supremacists and MAGA bots. All of that information was able to basically provide him with a cult following that wouldn't have heard his message if it wasn't for social media.
Oh, I agree with that completely. I hadn't really thought about it like that, but it's similar to that kid, Tekashi 6ix9ine, who's just asking for something bad to happen to him at this point. He played the social media game to the T, man. And Donald Trump did the same thing. One of the things I watched with the kid, Tekashi, he built his following, because what the kids found out today, and I think it goes to athletes, it goes to entertainment, and just about anything you're doing, they're realizing that no longer do you actually have to be good at what you do. All you have to do is be popular. Do things that are polarizing, that are going to bring eyes to whatever product you're trying to sell. Mm-hmm. The more people you have follow you, the bank account is going to go. And you can't tell the young people about morals and how things are supposed to go, and how it's supposed to go, and how they're hurting the you know, their dignity, and they're not paying homage to the artistry and people who came before them, when their bank account is on 10. Mm-hmm. How can I tell Tekashi he's wrong for what he's doing, and he's sitting out eating steak with his lady friend, and he has $200,000 on the table, he has a mil on his wrist, he has $2 million on his neck, and $800,000 in a Louis duffel bag? How can I tell him he's living his life wrong? He's not going to hear anything.
Well, that's the thing. The thing is that, and I've talked about this with people before, is people say certain things on social media. They say things, but the actions say otherwise. You know what I mean? Like, people say, well, such and such is canceled, or such and such I'm not going to support, or such and such this, right? But then, like you said, the numbers don't bear that out. I mean, Kanye keeps coming back and over. Kanye's made more money since he's with MAGA. He's become more popular.
Yep.
Tekashi
yep.
is more popular because of the snitching and all of that stuff. So, you know, when he did his, you know, IG Live, like, there's 2 million people on there. Like, who are these people? I think sometimes we
forget. Yes.
I think one thing that people forget is that social media is a vacuum. And sometimes you'll see 50 posts about, 50 tweets or whatever, 50 Instagram likes or whatever, right? And you think that 50 is the world. You know what I mean? But it's not. It's just a small percentage of like real life. And people, here's the thing, people like train wrecks. People like drama. There's, and the reason, once again, another reason why Trump is the president is because people are good at saying one thing and doing another. So your neighbor can shake your hand and say Black Lives Matter, but when he goes vote, he punches Trump. So there could be somebody on here right now on social media say Tekashi's a snitch, Tekashi's this, I've never such and such, but secretly, you know, streaming whatever he's doing or following him on whatever he's doing because they're interested in the drama. Yeah. So you can't take social media at face value because people don't tell the truth. They tell you what they think they want you to hear and what, you know, goes with the flow, but is oftentimes not the truth.
Right. One day they'll figure it out. I heard a saying years ago. It said that a person is smart, but people are dumb. And, you know, people are usually really sheep. You know, they are. They go with the flow and they follow every little trend. And so one of the things I saw where the cancel culture, and they'll get it eventually, but it does the opposite of what people want it to do. It actually makes them more popular. People who didn't know about Tory Lanez before his incident with Meg Thee Stallion, they know about him now. People who didn't know about Tekashi before the snitching and stuff, they know about him now. People who didn't know Kanye before they canceled him 8 times, they know about it now because people want to see, well, who's this guy that nobody wants to listen to and they're trying to get him off TV? You do the opposite of what you're trying to do.
Yeah, sometimes good things happen. I mean, bad people get, you know, exposed and put away. Other times, I think good people get caught up in stuff. And unfortunately you have to deal with that wave of bullying or whatever it would be. And then, like you said, it's other times where you think what you're doing is thing, but you only are making that person, you know, more popular because as I always said, when a lot of times, you know, I would do a story and people say, I don't care about that. Or why is this news or whatever, you know, they want to say. And I'm like, you know, something, when I don't like something, I don't pay attention to it. You know what I mean? Like, to me, that's the best way to make it go away. You know, if I'm not interested, I'm not even going to make a comment. There's nothing to comment on because I don't care. If you really don't care, nobody says I don't care if they really don't care. Because if you really didn't care, that would be nothing to say. You know, I'm sure you do. You see all type of stuff on the timeline or people talking about or on TV and stuff. If it doesn't interest you, you just move on. You know, it's like a TV show. Like, I never got that. Like, I always, one thing that used to irk me is people would say, why are you watching that? I'm like, are you paying the bill? You know what I mean? Like are you paying, like, that's the society that we're in right now. It's whatever you do, there's like a pushback, even though it has nothing to do. People don't mind their business. You know, if I want to watch wrestling, if I want to watch The Real Housewives, who cares? I'm paying. You know, you're not. You don't have to. You don't have to watch what I watch. You don't have to listen. Like, music is another one. Like, why are you listening? Like, are you in the headphones? You know what I'm saying? And the same thing applies to media. It's like, I don't like Stephen A. Smith. Then why do you watch First Take every day? I don't like Skip Bayless. Why are you commenting under his, you know, undisputed videos? I don't like, you know, Clay Travis. I don't like why are you engaging with them if you don't like them? Like, I'm not going to spend 5 hours going back and forth with Clay Travis. He's a clown. Everybody knows that. So what's the point? All I'm doing, like you said, if I got 100,000 followers and he has 250,000 followers, there's probably maybe we're two different people. So that may, like you said, be some disconnect between the two. If I'm over here arguing with him, all I'm doing is giving him more fans. So it's like,
yeah, you are.
You like you said, you have to take social media for what it's worth, but you have to stick to the positive side of it. If not, you'll get swallowed up.
Yeah. Twitter is the best, worst place on the
planet, absolutely,
in my opinion.
Yeah.
I remember you had an interaction with a guy. And this is my thing. Like, if you don't like the name Black Sports Online, why are you clicking on the media?
Right.
He said, Black Sports Online is a racist name. What if I created White Sports Online? What would you have to say about that? And you replied to him, what's stopping you? You know, it's hilarious to me, man. Yeah, you can go ahead. You can create that. Go ahead, do it. And cover whatever you want to cover.
I've always pointed that out, you know, to people when they say why. Like, what you say, why are you posting this or what? Like, there's, you know, I don't know, 50 million websites out there. Don't have to check out mine. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's, you don't have to. It was always weird to me because I'm like, I remember one day, like, I got a little frustrated and I'm like, am I forcing these people to watch or read? Am I like physically taking their hand and making them click? Because I don't get it. Like, I hate this content. How can you hate content that you not are exposed to? You know what I mean? I'm sure there's like white supremacist sites like out there, right? I don't go to them, so I don't know what content it is because it doesn't, you know, interest me. You know, I'm sure there's like sites about, Pottery Barn. And so like I never got that part of it. But then I realized one day people just like to argue and people like to get you to engage and go back and forth. It's something that I had to learn not to do. Because no matter what you do, if you do something wrong, apologize, move on. If you do something right, say what you got to say, and move on. Like, I feel like that goes both ways. Like, I'm not perfect. Mm-hmm. I've made mistakes on my way coming up, you know, but the one thing I'm not, I think sometimes you make a mistake and then people are like, okay, everybody's going to have a, you know, let's make it into a big party. I'm like, that's pretty lame. That's why, you know, I think what happens when you get to a certain level of success, everything about your past and everything just in general is going to come, you know, out because people don't like it. No matter if you changed or, you know, you apologized or whatever, you know, it comes out and you got to eat it because if not, there's no winning against, like you said, when you said person and people, person is smart. People are a mob and followers. So if one person can't go against a group of people that have their mind made up regardless of whatever the facts may be.
Shoot, that's like at my job. I work for one of the local colleges here, and we had a situation where we had a white supremacist group. They taped posters all around the outside of the college on the doors, mm-hmm. you know, certain posts or whatever. And on the poster, you know, they talk about the Aryan Nation. And the guy, he's tatted up. He's got his bullhorn. He's got the head shaved with the leather jacket on, and you know, they spewing, you know, hate. And talking about joining their movement. Now, we took the posters down and we basically, you know, went through our cameras because I work security, trying to identify who it was, you know, to eliminate, make sure if we see them on campuses to, you know, stop them, whatever, question them and do whatever we need to do. Now, and then once that was done, you know, we move on. Now, I could have easily went to the website, found out where they meet, found out who's in charge and go there and say, hey, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, blah, blah, blah. No, I don't agree with what you're doing, but I'm going to move on. I'm not going to come to an Aryan Nation meeting talking about why you hate me. I didn't do anything to you. No, that's a waste of time. You know, don't give your energy to those things, man. And part of the reason why it's like that is because we live in a fake outrage culture. People fake caring about stuff all day long on the internet. You know, there's no way people care so much about certain things. Like one example of it, and I know you covered this, Ariel Powers, guard from the Mystics. She, you know, that famous back and forth with her and Andre Iguodala.
Right.
I was watching it as it was happening, and I talked about it on my podcast. And I was very matter of fact with Ariel Powers and saying that she was like, put some respect on her name. And they were saying, oh, it's because she's a female that he didn't say her name. And I'm like, and like the men were, you know, most men were like, we call each other by numbers all the time. And I like love what KD did. KD tweeted out when Brandon Ingram was going off in the bubble, he said, number 14 is a different breed. You know, that was a little jab. And so just to let them know, say, hey, there's no disrespect here. you know, we want to give you props, but you want respect in the way that you want it. Nobody owes you anything. I don't have to do anything. Andre Iguodala doesn't have to acknowledge anything. He took time out of his day to, you know, give you a shout out. And people were going at Andre, oh, he's terrible. He's misogynistic. He's this, he's that. And I said, they're only doing that because she is a woman. Because if Serena Williams had tweeted that out, Ariel Powers doesn't have that gumption with her, you know? And the fake outrage culture is that when she was trending, you know, they were spelling her name wrong. So the people didn't even know who Ariel Powers really was because they spelled her name wrong. Her name isn't spelled like Ariel the Mermaid. It's she has like, I think, an extra E in it or something like that. So that's how I knew right then and there. Oh, this is a fake outrage culture because you guys don't even know Ariel Powers' real name.
Right. It's here's the thing. The numbers don't lie. That's what I always say. The old Michael Smith show. The numbers don't lie.
Oh, I love people, that.
Yeah. The people that, you know, there's a reason that Fox News keeps Laura Ingraham and Tucker Carlson on. There's a reason that, you know, Barstool Sports can thrive. There's a reason all of this, you know, stuff can happen, that certain people can move on. It's that we get caught up in a wave. You know, you got to be very careful about the things that you say, because at the moment you really can't say anything. You know, like it's, you know, like you said, I call football players by their numbers all the time. You know, like it's a fake, like the guy that used to play for the Cowboys, 38. That's literally what I call 38. Mm. You know,
38 to God. Yeah.
38 to God, the legend. It's,
yes,
it's just a thing. But here's the thing, every little thing now is like everybody's hypersensitive. Everybody is taking everything. It's just, I blame literally Trump for this. Like, everybody's just hypersensitive about everything. You just don't say anything, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't just say anything. You know what I mean? It's just crazy, you know, to me. But it's maybe a good lesson, you know, just, you know, don't say anything. Because no matter what you say, because context doesn't work on social media. You know what I mean? it just doesn't work on social media. Like, even if you try to give context, it doesn't work. You know, like, and it's sad, but I always say, if you want to give context to a sensitive topic, like, you know, what you were just talking about, it's better to do it on your podcast, on a live stream, something where you continuously talk, you know, for a long period of time about it, because no matter what you do on social media, it's not going to work. And the more you talk, the worse it's going to get. I forget who it was. It was some actor or something, and he said something. And the initial thing he said wasn't great, but he just kept talking and kept tweeting, and it just got progressively worse.
Tweet through it. That's what they say. Yeah, tweet through it.
It just like I always say, if you're going to, you know, if you say something wrong or something happens to you, just say you're sorry and just keep it moving. Okay. Cause you know, like Andre Iguodala, like, I don't think he meant anything, you know, by it, but sometimes you just, you know, you don't want that heat on you. Look, I'm sorry. I'm saying your name. I'm saying your number, because that's our way of, as NBA players, as saying that, you know, we think you're a baller, like, no disrespect, et cetera, et cetera. And just go, because as you saw, because he didn't really say anything, and he kind of like, really? What did they start doing? They got off the topic of what he said and started bringing up his divorce case, or his, I guess, child custody case. You see what I'm saying? Like, that's what I'm talking about.
Up his past.
Right. If even though what he said was not bad, right? I think people agree with that. It wasn't bad. By him being indifferent about it, what happened was, now people had more ammunition to go searching. Like, and now they're pulling up stuff that does look bad. You know what I mean? They're pulling up things that do look bad. So
right, because I knew I wouldn't be able to tweeting at her or commenting on or tweeting about it wasn't going to properly, I'll say, basically convey what I want to say about it. So I was like, I have to talk about this on my podcast and you know, really don't be able to go in.
You're right. You're right. And I give that advice to all young media people, is that especially if you have a differing opinion on a major story, don't do it. Don't tweet. Don't put it on Instagram. Don't make a comment. Don't do anything, because it's okay to have different opinions as long as you're respectful and you're not doing anything crazy. But like, you know, just like say the Maya Moore story about her and the guy that she got out of jail. There are some people out there that have different opinions.
I saw that today.
Yeah. There's some people that
they on the fence.
Yeah, but and they was hitting me up like, "Hey Rob, you know, I don't know. Hey, don't hit me up. I do it on my podcast. I talk about what I feel about it and things like that." But it only takes one. It only have to be bad. It could just be like one wrong word, you know, out of place. Like, and next, and then once the wait, and then you can do. It's nothing you can do, you know. Like, sometimes it's bad stuff, but it may not necessarily be racist stuff, maybe sexist or whatever it may be. But it only takes, you know, it only takes one tweet. And if it gets caught up in that wave, it only takes one comment, it only takes one wrong turn, and you're done. So it's just better I'll tell people in media, it's just better just put your stories out there. If you're Black, try to make as many pro-Black stories as possible. Stay in your lane, and then go to your other outlets where you can express yourself, your streams, your YouTube, where you can clearly explain your context, because if not, it's not going to work out well for you.
Right. And shoot, for me, when I saw it, I was happy for him. You know, think about men like Jonathan Irons. Society doesn't care. Society doesn't care about the functioning men, a lot of functioning men that's walking around here every day, but let alone a man who was convicted at 16. He has a 50-year sentence. I mean, they're going to spit him up, chew him out, and throw him away. But for his story to have developed into what it is now, it's rare that that happens. So I'm happy for him. You got your freedom. You found your wife. I mean, I hope that they're together until their dying day, you know? But one narrative, once the story, because people don't know the full story. I see people talking about it. They don't know the full story yet about how they met, how long they've known each other, because they think that they just started talking when she started on the case. But she met him at 18 through a prison ministry group. And so he was 27. So I'm waiting on the society have a thing about older men with younger women. And they talk about how, you know, it's wrong. And you shouldn't be interested in these younger women. You should want women your age. Well, it's a biological thing. Men prefer younger women. It's just what it is. And women do prefer older men. It's always been that way, you know, and you're not going to be able to change people into changing their preferences. But I'm waiting on that to come, that, oh, he groomed her from prison. She was just a baby when they met, and he manipulated her and blah, blah, blah. So I'm waiting on that to come out.
Yeah, just like I said, sometimes the thing that I've learned is just let it be. Let people talk. Don't step into it. Because the other thing, everybody's watching, and everybody's screenshotting. Even in your personal conversation, something that I learned, you can't trust even the people that you think are your friends these days. They're the main one. Like, you know, think about John Wall, right? You know, he's out hanging out doing his thing or whatever, right? And how does it get to the internet? You know what I'm saying? Like, how does that get out? You know what I mean? So
how does that get out?
Yeah, I mean, you can't even trust sometimes. I mean, you know how you have friends and then you got, like, real friends? Like, you should be able to trust your real friends. Mm-hmm. But it's those
should be able to
fringe friends that you just talking to because you feel comfortable with and they told you stuff about them. You tell them stuff about you, but because you 10 toes down and not someone to put information out there and send screenshots, you holding it down, But as soon as things go left, they're the ones that are throwing you under the bus for stuff that happened in private. And that's why I think as anybody in the community that I would say that is coming up, that would be my advice to you, is that, like, whatever circle you got, keep it real, real tight, okay? And your opinions on things that are maybe a little bit left, you know, a little bit kind of out there, be very careful about who you're showing those to, because it could be 5 years later, you guys were cool 5 years ago, and now you're not cool. Something happens, and they say, oh, I remember, you know, when Brandon said, he like, do this to women. And, you know, like, you got to be very, very, very careful.
Yeah. If you're around able-bodied people that have a cell phone, you should be on edge. The cell phone has changed the game. Nothing is private anymore. Man, just look at Bow Wow. Even though the recording of him and, you know, the young lady, his the mother of his child, it was pretty bad on his part, but he's thinking that he's just talking to her. He's not knowing he's recording, because I'm pretty sure he knew he was being recorded. He doesn't say those things. But, I mean, yeah, and you're right. And that goes into what I want to talk about, too. So where were you when you found out the news about Chadwick?
About who? Chadwick. Yeah, I was, you know, I was just at home. And what I saw, I follow him on Twitter. So when the tweet came out, initially I thought maybe he was hacked. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
because, you know, someone had passed away. Tweeting, you know, that they passed away is a little, you know, unsettling.
Yeah.
And I saw it, and, you know, I did my, you know, I, at that point, nobody had reported anything. So
no,
I started to kind of do my due diligence to see, like, hey, is this real? Like, you know, because this can't be real, because this, I just seen this guy in at the end game. And this is 2019. Yeah. And nice guy. Talk to everybody, every fan, all, you know, like, you know, it was the world premiere. So, I mean, it was fans there, but, you know, it's the kind of I'm not in the elite. I'm just saying, I just knew somebody that got me in, but, you know, it's kind of upper echelon, but those people bring kids, they bring their family, they bring their friends. Like, I brought a friend, and, you know, these are big stars. You know, this is Scarlett Johansson, this is Robert Downey Jr. And he was really, you know, really nice. And I remember I told him, just, you know, like, a real brief conversation. Like, you know, like, I grew up with comic books all my life. I grew up reading fantasy books and stuff. And I'm like, I see, you know, white people, they go to Star Wars, they dress up. Harry Potter, they dress up. You know, Batman, you know, dress up. I've been to Comic-Con like a million times. I was like, it's the first time, like, I've been to Comic-Con and I've seen so many black people there. Like, more than usual. Like, there's always your standard amount of, you know, black comic book geeks like myself. But I'm like, no, it was more.
Right.
And they were dressed up as Black Panther and Shuri and African garb and stuff. And I said, I went to the theater, you know, to see Black Panther. And when I went to the theater, it was a screening, like a little media, whatever you want to call it, screening. And there's people dressed up and everything. I'm like, they didn't have it. I'm like, you gave these people something that they thought, you know, in our community, for whatever reason, you know, I don't know. I think we've just been brainwashed. It's like, we can't like different things or soft or whatever. But I'm like, you gave it to someone that they can watch. I'm like, there's no way that Infinity War and Endgame are doing $1 billion if not for Black Panther, because you brought them a whole other audience. Like, hey, it's cool to watch Marvel movies. It's cool to of Thor and all of this, Thor Ragnarok and Spider-Man and all of this stuff. It's cool now, you know? And that's what I was telling them. Like, it's cool now. And I like, that's a cool thing, because I've always been in that culture. I'm like, it's cool now. And he just was like, thank you and everything. And we had a little laugh about people always asking him to do the, you know, Wakanda Forever and stuff. Just seemed like a, you know, a good dude. And you know, I know he wanted to keep it a secret. He wanted to stay private. I just hope that, you know, that worked out the way that he wanted it, you know, to work out. I hope he didn't feel like I had to keep it private because, you know, black men aren't supposed to show struggle and all of that stuff like that. I hope that's just, you know, he just didn't want anybody. And I think black people in general is just like, we don't want people to worry about us. Like, we got enough to worry about,
right?
And we don't want people to worry about us. Yeah. And I don't know if that's actually healthy, right. You know, for us. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's actually
healthy, you know, that we feel like we have to keep all of our struggles internally, because I think sometimes you're like, man, I'm black, you know, I'm struggling because of X, Y, and Z, but, you know, this person just lost their kid, the cops just shot their kid, or this person can't eat because of the coronavirus, to no job. You know, like all of this random stuff, you know, you feel like you can't get out whatever you're dealing with because you see 100 other people dealing with 100 different other things. Yeah. So
yeah,
it was tough. I you know, like celebrity death, I'm not like one of those people that when a celebrity dies, like I just lose it, because I feel like that's a weird they're just people. And I'm not saying that their death shouldn't be, but like to me, a celebrity death and your neighbor dying, it's still death and somebody's still hurting and stuff. So like I feel bad and I feel, you know, like, you know, grief for them. But you know, some people are real over the top with it. But he has hit a little, you know, different. You know, he's around my age.
Yeah.
In knowing what he was dealing with and what he had to do and what he did, you know, for people, it hit a little different.
Yeah, it did. It hit close to me, man. I feel the same way about especially celebrity deaths, but three deaths that hit a little different than any other celebrity death. The first for me was Michael Jackson. You know, I remember my mom, I was like 13 and she bought me 13 or 14. She bought me his Invincible album for Christmas. And that's where the love for Michael went from there. And I went back and I watched all his videos, listened to just about all of his music. His posthumous album, Escape, I still have it on repeat, you know, on my phone. I play it all the time. So his death impacted me greatly. And Kobe did, which was shocking to me because I was a Kobe hater early on, you know, because I was a Shaq guy, you know, I was Kobe hater. You know, he ball hog, man. Kobe, you know, he's ball hog. But older Kobe, I loved older Kobe because older Kobe was surly. You know, he's on a team with a bunch of teenagers, seem like them. Just they do is play around, they joke. They don't take basketball serious like he does. And he was just, you know, he just had that old man mean face all the time, man. So I loved older Kobe and what he was getting ready to transition into post-basketball. And that's when I really started to connect and see Kobe in a different light and really started to like Kobe. And then Chadwick, you know, and the reason I brought up Chadwick is because what we talked about, his inner circle really loved and respected him. Because think about it right now. Say LeBron James, God forbid, comes down with an illness and he keeps it in his inner circle. He wants to keep it as his own. He'll tell a few people. How much money do you think news outlets will pay for a story that LeBron James has something life-threatening he came down with?
Right, exactly. I mean, you're right. You know, it's I think that's also part of it too, is that I think it's part of it that he could have did differently and he didn't. And it just shocked people. Like I think it lessens the blow a little if you know that it's coming. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when you don't know
that
it's coming, it's like, man, it just really, you know, it really hits you hard.
It does. I saw the interview, one of his co-stars from, I think it's the Bloods 5. And he talked about meeting Chadwick on the set, and his wife, you know, asked him about it. He said, well, what do you think of Chadwick? Because, you know, he was excited to work with him. You know, he watched his rise up from Thurgood to 42 to Black Panther. And he told his wife, he said, I think he's a little precious. She says, well, what do you mean? He said, after every set, you know, he has somebody like massaging his feet. You got somebody like rubbing his shoulders, his girlfriend is holding his hand by his side, and they're like tending him and caring for him, you know, kind of like hand and foot. He says, so I'm thinking, he said, man, maybe this Black Panther stuff is going to his head. And he started to cry. He said, I just did not know what he was going through. Mm-hmm. And I forgot the, I think it's a homeostasis when they were doing his feet and massaging his feet. I guess it has something to do with him going through chemotherapy and stuff like that, because a coworker was telling me about it. But I say you can't judge, man. You really don't know.
Right. You just let's say that, and that's maybe the most important thing that, you know, we might can in this with is that you don't know what people are going through. So you mm-hmm. gotta just kind of, when you're making comments and things like that, and once again, something that I had to learn, like, you just don't know. You don't want to be the person that has to go back and be like, I wish I didn't say that.
Yeah.
Sorry, my dog is ready to go outside.
Oh, no, it's all good. It's all good, man. I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for taking the time out of the day. I know you're a busy man, and coming on and talking with me. Let people know your social medias, your websites and everything, where they can find you and where they can find your content.
Yeah, so, blacksportsonline.com. And follow me on Twitter at BSO, and Facebook is Black Sports Online. I got a new podcast that's coming out. We just did a couple of episodes before the big announcements called Keep That Same Energy with Robert Littow. So you can find that on SoundCloud and iTunes and Spotify. But yeah, the name is exactly what we're talking about. So we got some big interviews coming out next week with Michael Smith and Michael Holly about their new show. And the Charlo brothers about their pay-per-view fight. So, yeah, it's going to be some big things going on.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. For sure, man. Hey, and I want to give you your roses now, because I know they wait until, especially for our great black men and great black women, they don't get their roses until they're gone, man. Just know that you've been an inspiration to me. And, you know, watching you and how you've grown over the years has really motivated me, you know, to branch out and do my own thing. And, you know, to get things started, man.
I appreciate it, man. And you keep doing what you're doing. And if you need me, you let me know.
Oh, for sure, man. Hey, man. I want to be able to keep that same energy, man. Because I already know. just from the title, I know how that's going to go, man. So, definitely, I'll definitely be tuned into that. But, hey, guys, remember to check me out on YouTube, The True Definition of a Sports Fanatic. It's YouTube, my podcast of the same name. Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor, Breaker, CastBox, all those good things. I got more videos, more interviews coming up this week. So stay tuned. And, man, hey.
God bless you, man.
But I told you. Yeah, man. It's been a pleasure, man. It's been a pleasure. Hey, you. Yes, I'm going to stop the recording, but stay on just a second for me. But, hey, for everybody who's watching, man, I'll talk to you guys later, man. Peace.